Welcome to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. Episode 5. Dewdrop. Dewdrop had already lost her cousins twice amongst the crowds who thronged in the citadel that evening. Now Albright had bounded into one of the brightwood saplings, and a half-blind pine marten was threatening to take the fawn before a heart of the king. Dewdrop had to exaggerate her signs to be seen, and her legs ached by the time the hind-marked fool understood who they were. He made a hasty retreat into the crowd, and Dewdrop nudged her cousin back towards the Evenside gate.
"Why are the Greenmasons always so mean?" asked Albright, sulking close to her heels.
"Why do you have to be such a boisterous idiot?" Dewdrop signed back at her cousin. "Where's your brother?"
Albright made no reply. He had caught sight of a cricket floundering on its back in the hard-packed earth and was bouncing after it. Dewdrop bleated for his attention, but he ignored her. She snorted annoyance and scanned the crowd for his brother, Halflight, instead. Farclaw's citadel stood at the heart of Highwood, a colossal fortress so large it could take a full morning to circumnavigate its walls, with the mighty Blood Oak at its centre. Like the other boundary of the Bloodwood, the walls of the citadel were woven from ancient beech and willow, their trunks knotted together so tight that not even a field mouse could find its way through. Dewdrop repeated the name songs through her head time and again as she wandered through the crowd in search of her cousin, terrified she might make a mistake with her sign words and cause some political crisis with one of the other high-marked families. There were so many. Shoulders of the king competed to hold their place by the Green Gate, each wanting to be the first to welcome the Applewood foxes into the citadel and to be seen doing so. Closer to the trunk of the Blood Oak, shoulders from the districts of Hilltop, Nightwood and Low River parleyed with some of the more important hearts from the forest's larger districts, strengthening the alliances that kept the Bloodwood's smaller communities from being swallowed by their larger neighbours. The pale badger, Faintstripe, shoulder of Morningside, was deep in a heated argument about water management with a skinny hog headmarked with the trotter print of the Lord of Lakewood. The hog, Slim Snout, evidently had no idea that Morningside could teach dung to smell sweet as roses given half a chance. Dewdrop made certain to give them both a wide berth. The grey-furred badger wouldn't back down until they ran out of daylight. That is, if they ran out of daylight. Her father had ordered for the Brightwood graflings to bloom for the arrival of the Applewood foxes. All day the green masons of the citadel had tended nothing but the dark stems that spiralled out from the centre of the citadel. By the time it was dark, the entire citadel was to be filled with the light of their flowers. Teams of hindmarked creatures had been fed for an entire cycle of the moon on a tincture of herbs and dried moon fruit, and had given their water to the roots in unison that morning while others preened over the budding shoots, prying the delicate casings from the young buds so that the flowers of Brightwood might bloom together as one. The demand for workers had been such that Dewdrop's own nightbank, a lovely dell filled with cherry blossom all year round and not far from where her father slept, had been left unattended until noon. Redflank, the heart in charge of her bed rights, had assured her assertively that the blossoms would survive one morning without care. The stoat had stalked back to the citadel as soon as Dewdrop had dismissed him, grunting his annoyance as soon as he thought he was out of earshot, but the tough old heart had been good enough to ensure a team of squirrels was sent back to the dell for the afternoon. Dewdrop steadied herself amid the clamour. Halflight was nowhere to be seen in the crowds around the Green Gate, and her father would soon be here, bringing the Applewood foxes with him. Albright was useless. Dewdrop snorted angrily as she watched him charge after his cricket, careering straight into a gathering of hearts from the Great Rock, scattering the rabbits like leaves in the wind as the fawn bludgeoned his way through their number. Dewdrop caught him with a sharp kick and brought his attention back to the world beyond his insect friend, sending him a picture of what she would do to him if he didn't start behaving a little bit more respectfully of their many guests. She turned to the rabbits with deliberate calmness and offered them the sign of welcome. Albright hurriedly copied her signed words. "It's good of you to welcome us," signed a cream rabbit, offering the sign of thanks along with the other hearts. Dewdrop wondered if she saw the rabbit's sign words edged with mild amusement at her cousin's childish behaviour. She grunted quietly. Even the low-marked creatures of the forest were becoming bold in their excitement for the brightwood flowers. "You are Greatfoot," signed Dewdrop. The heart looked briefly terrified at the mention of her name. "Good," thought Dewdrop, pleased. "I am," signed Greatfoot, collecting herself. "You were at the ritual for the Blackwood Badgers." "I serve Bloodfruit to the Lord of Blackwood's Daughters," signed the rabbit. "I'm honoured that you would remember one such as me." The other rabbits skittered with excitement. Dewdrop felt them share a picture of this moment, of meeting the king's daughter and one of their own, engaging her in conversation. Their glee was palpable. Only the gods knew how much the tale might be distorted by the time they took it back to Great Rock. "You were hindmarked, then?" signed Dewdrop, remembering. "I was," signed Greatfoot. "But I was honoured with a heart print soon after. It's still fresh, see? I oversee all the servers for the shoulder of Great Rock now." "You've risen quickly," signed Dewdrop. "And the gods have been kind," signed the rabbit. "They have," thought Dewdrop, and then, quietly, "but they can also be cruel." She allowed herself a private picture of this proud rabbit with her mocking sign words being chased from the forest, or, even better, being thrown into the river, where her arrogance would be washed away as quick as her brand new heart mark. "See how the gods treat you without my father's mark on your side." Now that she looked more closely, Dewdrop could even see the old hind mark still clinging to the fur of the rabbit's backside, flaking away from the skin like dried dung. She felt her lip rise in disgust, but controlled herself before any meaning could be read into it. "The gods reward those who honour them with their service," she signed carefully. The cream rabbit took the compliment and swelled like a puffball. Dewdrop allowed the moment, and then added, "Your master, the Shoulder of Great Rock, must be here. I've not seen him yet."
"Ah, yes, he's here," signed the rabbit. "We came in with him. Yes, we came in with him. He is consulting with the Green Seers, consulting by the Blood Oak Tree. He'll be back before Applewood arrives."
"The Green Seers?" signed Dewdrop, with a grunt of surprise. "One did not take Dragfoot for a religious sort of all."
"Oh, he is. He definitely is,"
signed the cream rabbit, and the other hearts all gave their own signs of agreement along with her.
"He consults them every time he comes to Farquhar Citadel,"
signed a brown buck rabbit from the back of the group with a frisson of enthusiasm. "And now they all sign without being invited," thought Dewdrop. It was her own fault. "Give a heartbeat of your time and they will take the whole day." "You must excuse us," signed Dewdrop softly. "We are needed by the Green Gate." The hearts all bowed and tittered again as Dewdrop placed her hoof lightly against their marks before barging her cousin roughly from the gathering.
"Why do you give them the blessing?"
asked Albright as they headed for the Green Gate. In response, she sent him two pictures of a possible future, one in which the hearts of the king all served him eagerly, full of grace and loyalty, and the other where the dullards had their hindmark underlings poison the blood fruit. "Besides," she signed more seriously, "he'll give him something to remember." But Albright's attention was elsewhere again.
"That's Faint Stripe,"
he signed, signalling the pale badger still engaged in his crusade with the Lakewood boar, who even now already carried his sign words with the heaviness of one who regretted ever meeting the omniscient Shoulder of Morningside. "Don't stare," signed Dewdrop with small quick movements. "If Morningside drags you in, we'll be stuck here all night." Dewdrop reached out her mind for half-light, but her thoughts were overwhelmed by the churning mass of creatures within the citadel, bustling like white water beneath the waterfall. Many of them were from families who had sought shelter in this very place when her father had breached the tree wall, where they prayed to Junos that he would protect them from the wrath of Southwood. In a way, the god of Hightwood did exactly that. If her grandfather had survived the war he had waged, he would have slaughtered every high-marked creature in the forest, installing new shoulders and hearts of the king in their places to cement his rule. But her grandfather had fallen against the Great Bear, leaving the battle to his son. Her father had deserved vengeance, both for his father and for the brother whose death had sparked the fires of war. But instead, he'd given mercy. When he broke through the Green Gate that day, there had been no more killing. He had simply walked to the vast trunk at the centre of the citadel and placed his head against the bark to claim its blessing. He conducted his first ritual that day, giving his mark to those same Highmark creatures who, up until that moment, had been cowering in fear of him. The same animals who crowded this place now to welcome one of the greatest bloodwoods in the kingdom into his rule. Not that any of them were helping her find Halflight. She dropped her nose to the ground to search for his scent among the trampled bracken. The stems were mashed into the hard earth and the air was dusty with spores that stuck to the wet of her nose. She let the sounds fade from around her until the true scentscape of the citadel came into focus, coloured with the hum of fur and hoof. She let her mind wander on the evening air, images born in every flurry. There was hog, wolf, bull, no Halflight. She searched deeper behind the animal scent. Bracken, earth, bloodroot, beetle, ant. Nothing. Then, finally, he was there. She raised her head and searched in the direction she had sensed him. Slipping between the mare of Thistlebank and the shoulder of Oakdale came Halflight, full of energy and skipping recklessly close to the saplings, just like his brother. Behind him tottered Fernleg, another of Dewdrop's cousins, this time on her aunt's side of the family. The doe strutted confidently through the crowd, head held high, and guided the fawn in the right direction with the occasional bleat of encouragement or snort of reprimand. "I believe you might have lost this," signed Fernleg as Halflight and Albright bumped and skittered around each other. Dewdrop gave the doe a sign of thanks, bowing low. "I owe you again, cousin," she signed. "I found him by the green seers," signed Fernleg, clambering all over the ritual site. "Is his brother as bothersome?" "More so," signed Dewdrop, sending her an image of Albright tumbling over the brightwood saplings. Fernleg shivered in sympathy. "Oh, it must be so hard growing up without a mother or father to guide them," she sighed. "I'm sure you and my uncle do your best, of course, but I do so worry about our little cousins. I know my mother fears for them. Is there no chance the king would consider returning them to Southwood?" "My father says they're safer here." "Safer?" signed Fernleg, bristling. "Albright would be ruling there now if he were of age. The wood is his by right. What place could possibly be safer than that?" "Forgive me, cousin," signed Dewdrop. "I meant no offence." "None have been taken," signed Fernleg dismissively. "Southwood nearly wants its rightful heir home again, where he belongs." "Of course," signed Dewdrop. "I'm sure my aunt looks forward to their return." "All Southwood looks forward to that day," signed Fernleg. "And my mother has made the Bloodwood strong for their return. Families are growing, and our numbers are almost what they were before the Stag's War. The trees are fruiting more than in our grandfather's day. I'm sure the twins will be grateful for all their Aunt Regent has done for them," signed Dewdrop. They turned to see Albright tumble over the stem of yet another brightwood sapling. "Well, at least we'll be popular with the green seers today," signed Fernleg. "They'd probably anoint Albright for his work clearing the citadel of all these foreign gods." Dewdrop whisked away a huge fly that had been bothering her ears. "Father says the gods are stronger when they stand together," she signed. "He says Junos would welcome the bloodwood branches of other gods into this highwood." "Sometimes the gods and their priests don't always see eye to eye," Fernleg replied. "Whatever the gods did while they were walking, it's the green seers who tend the bloodwoods now. They control their fruiting. But what if the animals of Highwood decide they prefer your father's pretty flowers to the green seer's fleshy acorns? What if it is not just the blessing of Junos that feeds Highwood? Where would that leave the green seers?" Dewdrop had no idea. It had never occurred to her that her father's brightwood saplings were anything but a means to bring light to the forest's nights. They weren't there to upend the power of the green seers. Whatever her cousin thought her father was planning, she was wrong. "The king does what he thinks is best for the kingdom," she signed.
Fernleg indicated her agreement. "Of course," she signed. "Of course. How could anyone believe otherwise? But we all know the Green Seers hold back change, here and in Southwood. It is their duty, of a sort, to preserve the order the gods gave this world. Safe, stagnant. But your father sees how the world could be, as Greyport did before him. Nothing stays the same forever," she signed. "Except the dead."
The buds on the brightwood saplings fluttered as if they had been listening.
"Greypaw was mad," signed Dewdrop.
"Greypaw was ill," corrected Fernleg. "He lashed out at the height of his fever, and our uncle was the one who took the blow. Disease started the war, not madness."
Dewdrop made no reply.
"I only say this because I am a true servant of the king," replied Fernleg. "I believe in my uncle, not these absent gods. Religion has made us weak. It tempers every action with fear of what the gods might do in retaliation. It stops us from being in control of our own destinies. The Bloodwood trees should be controlled by the king and the king alone. The king is the only god left walking. And the king is a stag of Southwood."
"My father is king of the whole kingdom," signed Dewdrop.
"Long may it be so," signed Fernleg, leaning in close. "The Green Seers can keep their religion. If the king has bloodfruit of his own, then he has no further need of them. Imagine a forest filled with every fruit of every bloodwood. No gods to fear, no ritual, only the king."
Dewdrop tried. Back home in Southwood, the bloodwood tree had been a chestnut. The bloodfruit that grew on its bloodmark trees had been the size of her hoof, sweet and smooth, and encased in clean shells that her fruit maidens split open for her, letting their fleshy insides glisten in the summer sun. But the bloodfruit of Highwood was small and bitter, with tough, bony cores and an outer layer of flesh that lay exposed to the air, raw and wet. They were smaller than Southwood's chestnuts, but they were plentiful. The stout little acorns bulged from their cups during the day, dripping deep red sap onto the forest floor. Dewdrop frequently returned to her blossom dell to discover her back was peppered with crimson spots that had to be licked away before she could sleep. She missed Southwood. The idea of seeing its chestnuts here in Highwood warmed her heart.
"I've never seen the brightwood fruit," she signed.
"They're not as spectacular as the flowers," Fernleg replied regretfully. "Tart little berries. Pop as you eat them. Blood goes everywhere if you're not careful. It's quite an experience. They don't glow like the blossom, which some would see as a shame. You should try them. They're hardly as pleasant as our chestnuts, of course, but I think on the whole I prefer them to the acorns."
Dewdrop glanced over to a nearby sapling. Its buds were trembling, ready to burst and fill the darkening sky with their light. She wondered if the Green Seers of Highwood would allow her to take their fruit once it ripened. It would surely serve the same purpose as eating from the Highwood blood oak, she reasoned. The fruit of any blood would nourish the mind and steer the soul from hunger blight. And she'd do anything to avoid having to crunch through another mouthful of the soft, stringy jelly of acorn flesh. Maybe the Green Seers would make an exception for the daughter of the king.
Fernleg must have seen the hunger in her eye.
"They are indeed a worthy bloodfruit," signed her eldest cousin. "But Lucifer's blessing was upon the flowers, not the fruit. And for our purpose, the graflings sit on Highwood rootstock. Their roots will not spread like those of the blood oak. There'll be no brightwood marks on any tree but these few saplings here. And so we must make do with graflings until the green masons learn better the art of planting true bloodwoods. For now, the bloodfruit of Highwood is the acorn, and that acorn is the sign of its power. Your father may have been born in Southwood, but his god must now be Junos. We, his family, must continue to eat from the blood oak. You understand this?"
Dewdrop gave the sign of agreement immediately, and Fernleg hummed approval. The brightwood buds stilled themselves.
"Though I'm sure a nibble wouldn't do any harm," she added quickly. "Just don't let the Green Seers see."
From the far side of the Green Gate came a sound of singing. A melody of trust and friendship made its way to Dewdrop's ears, begging her to draw closer so she might see the sign words and know the stories they told. From the sound of it, it could be one of the songs of yesterday, the Lovers of Brightwater,
or maybe the song of Footshaw the Greenmason. It was difficult to tell without moving closer to see. They were sure to be songs illustrating the long friendship between Applewood and Highwood, there to welcome the forest's guests as they came to the king to receive their mark, assuring the citizens of both Bloodwoods that the alliances of the world remained just as they had always been, strong and stable as the Bloodwood trees themselves. The family of Highwood may have changed, but the love between the two Bloodwoods would remain strong as it ever was, stronger even, under her father's guidance. He'd be here soon. Dewdrop called back her young cousins, and the four of them began to move to their places by the green gate. The crowds drew in closer. Fur and sweat thickened the air.
"I hear rumours that your guests from Applewood had brought singers of their own," signed Fernleg.
"I've never danced an Applewood song," signed Dewdrop, "but I hear they're beautiful." The sound of the dance was indeed beautiful. Dewdrop had no idea what the sign words might be, but the voices she heard were saturated with emotion. The sounds of victory, camaraderie, and friendship filled the air like scent. The throng parted to let them through, animals turning to face them, echoing the emotions of that song. "There is magic in the dance of an Applewood song," signed Fernleg, giving the sign of thanks to a family of boars she recognized as they backed away to let them pass. "They say the salt god taught the Applewood foxes to sing before he heard the sea and drowned himself in its waters," she signed. "They say there are songs in Applewood older than any sung in Saltwood, though I doubt they are danced with the same grace."
"I would very much like to visit Saltwood," signed Dewdrop. "Father says I might accompany him if he goes there."
"Is he planning to?"
"He says some of the songs are in need of correction," signed Dewdrop. "There are some that say my father is no true king. They say he stole the Bloodwood from the bears."
Fernleg huffed uncomfortably. The crowds around the green gate were tight around them.
"I have heard the same tunes," she signed softly to avoid being seen.
"They say he called on dark spirits," signed Dewdrop. Fernleg touched a hoof to Dewdrop's shin to stop her. Dewdrop shook her off.
"My father won the kingdom in open combat," she signed. "There were witnesses, you know that."
"I have never doubted," signed Fernleg, clearly watchful of those around them. Something caught her eye behind Dewdrop.
"Our cousins are causing trouble again," she signed, nodding in their direction.
Albright and Halflight were taking it in turns to jump from a signing stone. Roots from the Bloodwood tree coiled around its base like snakes. Heart-marked animals fussed amongst themselves, distracted by the outlandish behaviour. Dewdrop took advantage of the moment to send her older cousin a picture of the night 2 moons ago when she'd crept from her dell, masked in darkness, and sneaked her way to the songstone of Morningside. It had been dark enough that no one there had seen her mark, taking her for just another creature risking themselves in the starlight. She slipped among them, unrecognized, watching the songs her father would never have allowed the singers of the Citadel to dance before her. The dances at the songstone had been bawdy, raucous, and a different species to those sung for the king and his family. She had heard the crowd joining in with the sound of emotion the singers made until she felt their hearts begin to beat as one and Dewdrop's heart along with them. They sung of murder and forbidden love, of hateful shoulders and snivelling hearts, and then their songs turned to her father. She'd been startled when she first saw his name signed among the dancers, more so when she saw what they signed next. They'd mocked his antlers, belittled his power, cursed him for raising dark spirits against the rightful king. There'd been laughter, curses, maybe even pity for the king. She'd never heard any other animal speak of him in this way, and yet their confidence told her this was not the first time such songs had been sung, though he had been king for less than a year. And worst of all, she'd done nothing to stop them. Her heart had still beat with theirs. Her voice had lifted itself with the same sounds of hatred she heard them singing. She caught herself before the end, ashamed. She ran from the glade, back through the night until she reached her Blossom Dell, her heart pumping hard, but at least beating a different rhythm to the song she had found herself singing. "I should have had them thrown into the pit," she thought to herself. Fernleg shifted uncomfortably on her feet. Dewdrop felt her nervousness. "A lie can be more beautiful than the truth," signed Fernleg softly. "But these are sign words for another time." They turned back to Halflight and Albright. The two fawns were taking it in turns to jump over each other's backs from the signing stone and were landing increasingly closer to the wolves who guarded the head-marked badger of Northwood. The crowds were watching them.
"I believe our cousins are about to make your father's delicate alliance with our northern friends a little more awkward," signed Fernleg.
Dewdrop barked for the twins' return, which startled Halflight to the point that the fawn twisted on the spot, catching his brother's feet with his head and sending the two of them clattering into the hind legs of one of the Blackwood wolves. The black wolf turned on them with a snarl full of teeth and a legacy of violence, but the creature quickly recognised their marks and controlled himself. He gave the sign of regret, along with a deep bow, but the two fawns were already scampering back to Dewdrop for protection.
"Will you see the Applewood singers while they are here?" asked Fernleg, once Dewdrop had again given the sign of apology for her cousin's troublemaking.
"I know how much you love to dance," she sighed. "I'd like to go," Dewdrop admitted, "but Father needs me for the ritual. He wants me to attend when he bites the bark of the bloodwood. He wants to show me how to do it well."
"You'll need to wonder," signed Fernleg, "once his time is done.
Father says it's harder for a deer to draw sap than it is for a creature with claws. He lost 3 teeth in finding the best way."
"Oh, I would never have guessed it," signed Fernleg. "He wears the stain of the sap so well, I always assumed he found it easy."
Something was happening by the green gate. A cacophony of excitement rose quickly, heralding the entrance of the king. Albright and Halflight bounded over, drawn by the noise.
"We need to get to the front," signed Fernleg.
The animals were tight-packed around the evenside gate, bodies pressed up against each other, smaller creatures struggling to hold their positions as heavy feet pounded the earth around them. The front of the crowd was held by two long lines of wolves stretching out between the green gate and the trunk of the blood oak, forming a path between them. Their snarls kept the swarming animals from the king's way, growling at any creature who stepped too close. Dewdrop held her head high, displaying her father's mark on her forehead, and the wolves parted to let her and her cousins through. Emerging from the crowd into the space between the two lines was like escaping from a briar bush. The press of bodies no longer hindered their movement, yet the eyes of the huge audience fell heavily upon them. The twins no longer bounced around their cousins. Fernleg and Dewdrop stiffened into place, still and expectant. The Evenside Gate was the largest of the citadel's entrances. An intricate network of branches formed a section of wall suspended above the gateway, clear of the ground and surrounding trees and with no roots of its own. Instead, the living stems were supported by tender branches that hung down from above, thick with sap, but soft enough that they could be quickly gnawed to detach the gate from the surrounding branches and slam it shut, securing the citadel. These were the same gates that had been closed to Dewdrop's father on the day he took the bloodwood tree, repaired and rehung and swung wide open as he led his applewood guests in beneath its huge arch. The three-horned stag was at the head of the procession, alongside an orange-flecked fox, the two of them walking side by side as equals. As she watched, they emerged from the shadow of the green gate and into the last light of day that filtered down through the leaves of the blood oak, speckling them with gentle sunspots that danced crimson across their coats. The headmarked representatives of other bloodwoods within the kingdom had emerged from the crowd to welcome the king and his visitors. Greyskin of Northwood, a wolf with pale yellow eyes, took up his place beside Fernleg. Beside him came Truesight, the black fox of Brightwood, Harrowback, the badger of Blackwood, Bucktooth of Saltwood, and 4 head-marked creatures of Bluebank, Rippledown, Hardwood, and the Allrocks, who were all different to the emissaries who had been in Highwood when the Lord of Blackwood had come to receive his mark. Nevertheless, they all stood there confidently enough, watching the approach of this new Blackwood lord. Alongside these were Knothole, shoulder of the citadel, the pine marten in charge of the evening's events. The signals he gave his team of waiting hearts were so subtle that Dewdrop could barely perceive them, yet the creatures busied themselves in their various duties, passing messages to the green seers, overseeing the green masons, tending the brightwood saplings, and all the invisible functions that would keep the night moving smoothly. The crowd accompanying the Lord of Applewood was now streaming through the green gate, hot on his heels. Teams of hunting foxes enclosed this second group, surrounding them in careful lines, clearly nervous of the many wolves holding back the restless throng from the citadel. "Your father walks with Firebrow," signed Fernleg gently.
"I know," signed Dewdrop.
"Good," signed Fernleg. "Then you know his son, the heir of Applewood?"
"Break cover," she signed, naming a huge fox who stalked behind the Lord of Applewood, fur as dark as his father's. "Also called the Thief of Throats," she continued. "He cleared Long River of the River Folk before the Stag's War."
"You know your history."
"Besides him is his sister Harford," signed Dewdrop, before her cousin could question her again. The visitors were almost upon them now.
"And what do you know about her?" asked Fernleg.
Dewdrop hesitated. "She misses two toes on each of her forepaws," she signed quickly.
"And do you know why?"
Dewdrop hesitated again. "I believe she had an accident," she signed. Fernleg snorted, amused.
"An accident? Is that what we're calling it?"
Her cousin sent Dewdrop a picture of the mad fox who had gnawed off her own feet, hobbling around on bloodied stumps. Dewdrop shook the image away the moment she received it. There was a snuffling behind them as the head-marked hog of Lakewood pushed his way hurriedly through the line between Fernleg and the wolf of Northwood.
"The king's daughter chooses her sign words wisely," signed the boar while nudging the wolf out of his way. "It is perhaps best the king does not see us spreading rumours about his visitors before they have even officially arrived, don't you think? Oh, do stop snarling, Greyskin. You look as though you're about to pass wind."
The wolf forced his lips back down over his teeth with the look of someone who had just swallowed a mouthful of the salt sea. Dewdrop smothered a snort of amusement.
"It is unlike a hog of Lakewood to be so late to the welcoming line," signed Fernleg. "You didn't forget where it was, did you, Slimsnout?"
"I was waylaid by the Shoulder of Morningside," signed Slimsnout. "It seems he has some quite unique views on how we might improve our Lakewood agriculture." "I'm sure your uncle Fulquill would be thrilled to hear them," signed Fernleg.
"Alas," signed Slimsnout, his limbs awkward in the formality of his expression. "My good lord, uncle of Lakewood, did not make me his head-marked servant for my memory. I doubt there is a song long enough to make an accurate record of all dear Faint Stripe's learning."
"You should take him back with you," signed Greysting roughly.
The hog looked up at the wolf beside him.
"Sadly, I'm not sure either of us would survive the long journey," he signed.
Dewdrop rubbed against Fernleg for attention. "Isn't Lakewood the closest Bloodwood to Highwood?" she signed. The head-marked boar evidently caught her sign words.
"I find," he signed pleasantly, "that the length of a journey is often better measured in the company you keep than the steps you take."
The wolf of Northwood touched his mark in agreement. By this point, Dewdrop's father was close enough that she could see his eye upon her. Behind him came Breakcover and his sister, Halffoot. Dewdrop felt the warmth of relief as the fox's paws were clearly to be seen still there at the end of her legs, intact save for some unsightly bald patches around the full set of toes. Granted, the skin in those small patches looked a little raw, but it was surely nothing more than hair loss. Dewdrop felt a rising anger at her cousin for making such a cruel jibe. Her father had overcome so much prejudice to become king, yet there were still those in her own family who thought that conditions like those afflicting this young fox could make her the subject of ridicule. What did it matter if someone were physically different if they were good beneath it all? Her father was proof of that, wasn't he? His extra antler was misshapen and ugly, but he ruled fairly, and he made the world a better place. And so would she. This fox looked nice enough. A little timid, maybe, and without the swaggering confidence of her brother. Yes, she would befriend this fox, Dewdrop decided, fur or no fur, and Fernleg could go swim in the river if she didn't like it. Her father and the Lord of Applewood came to a stop in front of Dewdrop. The fox's muzzle was stained with the same deep red mark that her father wore, the fur around his lips and snout matted with bloodwood sap. The same stain adorned his paw, the red darker still against the black of his sock.
These are the marks of lordship, thought Dewdrop. Her father might be king in Highwood, but in Applewood it was this fox who tore the bark from the bloodwood tree, this fox who held his paw against the wound, and this fox whose paw mark stained the fur of his subjects. The Lord of Applewood had entered this place honoured as an equal, walking level with the king. He would leave with her father's mark upon his head. "My Lord Firebrow," signed the king, "may I introduce my daughter, Dewdrop?" Dewdrop touched her mark and bowed before the visiting lord. She could now see the orange flashes in the fox's fur were interspersed with grey hairs. There was a delicate shake in the paw he lifted to bless her mark.
"The gods have honoured the king with a strong daughter," signed Firebrow.
"I hope all was well crossing the Great Lands," she signed after offering the sign of thanks. "I know there are still wild ones living on the plains."
"None that we encountered," signed Firebrow. "Your father has done much to quieten the paths between our bloodwoods, and our journey was quite peaceful."
He hummed contentedly and sent her a simple image of sunlight infused with the scent of grass. Her father drew her attention with a shake of his twisted horns.
"Our guests have come a long way," he signed, "and are no doubt eager to rest. Would you lead them to their dell?"
Dewdrop turned to leave, but the fox shook away the suggestion.
"We have rested a little and eaten by your tree wall," he signed to the king. "Your hearts were generous with what they offered us as you led us through the labyrinth. We are strong, but we are in Highwood now as outsiders. I would rest easier this night if my family slept as full members of its wider kingdom. If it would please you, my Lord of Highwood, I am now ready to receive the mark of my king."
The Threehorn tilted his head in acquiescence. "Then let us continue to the trunk of the bloodwood tree," he signed. "There you shall receive your mark, my Lord of Applewood, and the headmark creatures of your family, too.
And tomorrow we will rise as one kingdom, our two bloodwoods stronger as a result. But the day is late, and the roots of the blood oak grow thick and twisted close to the trunk. I would not want my good lord to stumble so soon after his long journey. I think it best we continue on with a little more light."
The stag gave a nod to the shoulder of the citadel. A moment later and there was a burst of activity around the brightwood saplings. Green masons fussed excitedly around the stems. The shuffling of the crowd stilled in response, expectant. Even Halflight and Albright, who had begun fussing amongst themselves during the formalities, were affected by the heavy hush that fell upon the evening. The nearest sapling was just behind Dewdrop, positioned directly in line between the green gate and the bloodwood tree. She and the other headmark creatures in the welcome party turned to watch. The brightwood saplings wore thin bark the colour of the night sky, each one already tall enough to reach over their heads. Only her father's twisted antlers stood higher. Each stem divided into many small branches, and each branch teemed with tiny cream buds all the way along their lengths. The light was dropping beneath the blood oak, the early twilight already fading into night. But the buds of the brightwood saplings seemed to retain some cold memory of day within their folds. They waited for her heartbeat. Then the shoulder of the citadel received some signal from his hearts, turned and bowed low before his king.
"My Lord of Applewood," signed the three-horn stag, "welcome to Highwood."
As he finished his sign words, there was a quiver from the nearest bloodwood. A bud on one of its uppermost stems sprang open, petals alight like the first star of night. A heartbeat later and another joined it on one of the lower stems, then three more in quick succession, then five, then 15. A murmur rose from the crowd. Blooms sprung up across the citadel, spiralling out from the blood oak until they reached the beech and willow of the wall. Shadows withdrew before the cold light. The Lord of Applewood stepped back in awe and a hum of amazement rose up from the creatures behind him. Her father sighed in what she thought must be relief. Dewdrop's own breath caught the sight of it.
every pair of eyes in the citadel opened wide as the heavens, while hundreds and then thousands of the buds ignited around them, bringing a pale dawn beneath the bloodwood tree. Every pair except one. The chill of the night came in suddenly around Dewdrop. Unnoticed by any of her kin, the daughter of Firebrow lay trembling in the dirt, tearing absently at the ragged, raw skin of her forepaws, blind to the beauty blooming around her. Her eyes were a hollow darkness, red and glistening wet with some unseen terror, and staring straight at Dewdrop. You've been listening to Kingdom, a story by Holly Francis. To learn more, visit hollyfrancis.co.uk, where you can discover how to support the project and influence where the story's going. Until then, may the gods always hear your song.